Thank you for watching Conscious Consumer Network. The live stream broadcast is free to view. You can pause and rewind live broadcasts to catch up, or view shows at a later date by accessing our free archives of all shows. Check out our broadcast guide to see what's on. You can show your support by donating to our network support fund. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter, or subscribe to the monthly newsletter for updates. We thank you for supporting free and independent media.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to my fourth show of Reclaiming Perception. Delighted to introduce Andrew Johnson as my guest tonight. Andrew's going to discuss how people have been terrorised by lies about 9/11 and how the energy cover-up ties into this. Now, I first met Andrew as part of Truth Juice in Hull, and he was one of the presenters there. And I have to say, he's one of my favourite presenters. And one of the reasons for this is he relies heavily on empirical facts. He sticks to facts and he lays those facts out. So tonight, I'm really looking forward to tonight's talk. And there's going to be people who are going to learn something new. And it's going to look at the 9/11 from a different angle than what other people have seen. I know for me, 9/11 was pretty much a wake-up call, as it was for lots of people. When you started to look into it, it made you challenge a lot more things. So thank you, Andrew, and welcome to tonight's show. And maybe I want to start with a question. What made you look at 9/11 in the first place?
Well, thank you very much for the introduction, Jo, and for inviting me onto the programme. And to answer the question, well, as I've said many times in some of these interviews, that I was looking actually in a completely different subject area initially, and that was about the UFO topic. That's really where I started researching intensively back in 2003, and that led me on to investigating 9/11, basically, because I discovered various facts about the UFO topic, and then came across some websites which were talking about 9/11, and eventually then found my way to a video which looked at how the towers were destroyed, and made some observations about that which I haven't really previously considered, and actually did a calculation as well, which is quite unusual. A lot of these videos don't, for example, do calculations, but this one did, and I checked that calculation and found that it was correct. And so that's what led me down a path, to the present time, really.
Mm-hmm. And I've heard you say several times on different interviews and when I've spoke to you personally about the, where your investigation has led you to contact Judy Wood and to become a friend of Judy Wood's. And I've looked at some of her stuff, and I know we're going to talk through that today. And one of your major concerns is why so many people are shouting about it, but they seem to be avoiding this subject area.
Very much so, and that's still the case. People think, they'll say things like, and I think a lot of it's well-meaning, they'll say, we shouldn't spend so much time theorising, or, there's all these various competing theories and people on different sides, and, it uses up a lot of time. And that's sort of true, but I'm not really talking about sides. I'm talking about, as you were mentioning in your kind introduction, evidence and things that you can show and prove. And so I have an attitude to 9/11 research, which is based on that and not based on theories. It's based on evidence.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one of the problems in general that people they get fooled because they don't actually think about what the difference is between theory and evidence and knowledge. Just to give a stupid example, do I have a theory that 2 + 2 = 4, or does it equal 4? Do I have a theory that we're using the internet and a webcam and a microphone to communicate, or are we using an internet, a webcam and a microphone to communicate? That's the difference, really, and this is the focus of Dr. Wood and indeed myself, because, for example, many people will jump to the who did 9/11 question, and ask you to answer that. So you'll say, oh, well, the official story isn't true. And then particularly this is true of television interviews. They'll say, well, who did it then? What was the motive? You get onto that once you understand what happened. That's the problem, and quite quickly when we want answers to this, we overlook the evidence, which is a starting point, really, I'm happy to theorize and speculate about certain things as long as people are clear when we don't need to debate anymore.
Mm-hmm.
People say you shouldn't be arguing, you shouldn't be debating. I agree, because when we know what happened, and certainly as regards to the World Trade Center, we know exactly what happened to it. We can stop theorizing, we can tell the truth, and we can encourage other people to do the same. But as you alluded to, I've documented now quite meticulously, and I started this exercise specifically in 2007. And it's been an ongoing exercise, which I spent less time on recently. But the last article that I wrote as regards to people who shouldn't be covering up the truth about 9/11, but are, the last article I wrote about that was in relation to the actions of Ken O'Keefe. And that, I think, was something like September last year, not that long ago, in other words.
Mm-hmm.
And I've basically been documenting this peculiar phenomenon that people can talk about 9/11, but they can't talk about how the World Trade Center was destroyed, and they can't talk about the person who has discovered that presented that to the world in various forms.
Yeah, I mean, for me as a layperson, when I've looked at Dr. Judy Wood's stuff, I mean, it's just so eloquently presented. And you know, just when you look at, I know you're going to go into more detail, but the facts that she presents, and when you see the visual images, when she compares it to the scientific evidence, it's got to be questioned. You know, and I'm a layperson, but I'm, you know, I've got enough intelligence to understand. And if I can do it, surely someone who's got a military background or an engineering background can challenge it in the same way.
Absolutely, Joe, yes. And that's I wholeheartedly agree with that. And I think, you know, I know that some people are put off. For example, you know, we've talked before this program, and I've sent you a copy of the book, which you kindly paid for, and were very appreciative of that. And you pick that book up and you think, oh, you know, some people will say, well, they barely even open it because they find it intimidating. But actually, if you do open that particular book, as you say, there are many diagrams and pictures. So it's not all words. And it's really written for a general audience, but also caters for a highly technical audience as well. If, in other words, there are bits that you don't need to understand all of it to understand what happened.
Yeah.
Sorry.
The thing that strikes me when you open the first few pages and you get, you know, the intro into the book is the qualifications of Dr. Judy Wood. What are backgrounds in? What, you know, you couldn't pick a better person to analyse a building falling down.
This is a very good point. And I think what, you know, kind of irks me and Dr. Wood is that that is often disregarded. And you'll get somebody who runs a YouTube channel and doesn't really have any scientific research experience making some sort of sweeping comments as if they know more about it than Dr. Wood. And this really is quite problematic, because they discard technical experience and technical expertise as if it doesn't matter. And of course, you and I both know that the way that the system works in terms of you know, the peer review process and the academic system, if I can call it that, is highly compromised and has its own problems with corruption, just as the political system does, just as the media do, and so forth. However, the individuals that are working in academia are not all corrupted, and they are, you should not just disregard their technical experience because they were part of an academic establishment at one time or another. You know, I currently do still work for a university, admittedly, and it's a, I would honestly say it's a relatively lowly academic capacity. I don't have any advanced degrees, but I am expected to work to a certain standard with the students that I work with, although it's done through distance learning, which gives me a lot of latitude and independence to do things like this without being you know, forced into doing things a certain way. So again, we should be mindful that people in the academic system are quote unquote clever. Are they honest? Well, you have to make that judgment for yourself. On this theme, without, you know, banging on about it too much, there is something about myself, Dr. Judy Wood, and obviously our great friend and partner in research, you might call him that, Richard D. Hall. We all have an engineering background. So engineering is, you know, different to science in some ways, because it's science turned into reality. It's science turned into solutions.
Yeah.
And basically, something either works or it doesn't work. And then, as engineers, we are tasked with making things work. So we can't debate things whether it works or it doesn't work. You know, the bridge either stays up or it falls down.
Mm-hmm.
The computer software either runs smoothly or it crashes. If it crashes, there's an error in it, and you have to correct that error. Yeah. So that's the sort of background that myself, Richard D. Hall, and Dr. Ward have worked in, you know, for many years. Probably if I added up our total experience, it's I think about 70 years, something like that, of experience. So we all have a background in technical analysis and that's that sort of thing, you know, with varying areas of expertise, basically. And whilst, you know, we wouldn't claim to know everything about everything, we do have a certain attitude, a certain skill set, which allows us to define problems and solve problems and that sort of thing. And there aren't that many of people like us in the research field. There are a few, but they're probably a minority, because the people with these skills are typically embedded in the system, you know, the corporate system or the university system, and they're just going along with the program. Somehow, Dr. Ward, myself, and Richard D. Hall, and a few others, you know, I could probably think of a few more if I, you know, made the effort. We somehow managed to sort of break out of the system to a greater or lesser extent. I'm probably more embedded in the system than the other two. As I say, I still work for the OU, but I'm not I'm not on this program in my capacity as an OU member of staff. So, you know, that's just sort of setting the scene a little bit from that side of things. And I think people should be mindful and not just disregard expertise, check see if they can validate that expertise in some way. I personally, I always encourage people to contact me directly by email, phone up. If you want to speak to me and ask me technical questions about anything, then, you know, you can do that. So, yeah.
I've got one more question to ask before maybe we go into your presentation. So obviously, you know, people who've looked into 9/11, lots of people have been driven to gain a better understanding or an understanding of it through architects and engineers. Richard Gage led that. And so naturally, because there's so many architects and engineers signing this petition to reopen the investigation, so, and there's lots of elements of truth within what's been, you know, disclosed there. So the natural perception of a person is, oh, well, these must be genuinely good guys because they're putting it out there on a scale that it wouldn't have got out there. So because they're not discussing Dr. Judy Wood's stuff, and people tend to, you know, society tends to go with what's the most popular and what more people are talking about, really, the men on a subconscious level, they could be pushing back on not looking at this energy stuff that Dr. Judy Wood talks about, and they might be saying, well, why are the architects and engineers not talking about it? What's your view on that?
Oh, well, I don't have a view on that at all. I can prove that Richard Gage is a liar.
Okay.
That's not a view. And I've got an article about that on my website. Maybe I'll elucidate. But you know, you make a very good point there, and I think this is where you start to get into the areas that I've written about, not just specifically about Mr. Gage, but about perception management. You know, your show is called Reclaiming Perception, isn't it? And this is that right there that you've mentioned is a key area, in that the Architects and Engineers Group was set up 2007. Maybe we'll discuss the significance of that date later on. And so they gather people around saying, rah, 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 you know, the government's wrong. We need a new investigation. Sign the petition here and you'll be helping to save mankind. And people kind of seem happy with that. But what they don't realize, But what they don't realize is that Mr. Gage and his merry band of followers are presenting a new false story. And so it's really, as Dr. Wood has said in some of her presentations, and probably me as well, if you don't like the lie behind door number one, as in the Osama bin Laden type lie, we show you the lie behind door number two, which is the bombs in the building lie, which indeed was partly set up by people like George Bush, who talked about explosives in the building, you know, allegedly by accident. But I have to wonder if that was a deliberate sort of Easter egg type, you know, hunt comment. So you get another false story out there. You get this false story of thermite and controlled demolition. And I was taken in by that story initially when, you know, the time that I discovered that the 9/11 official story was false. I was taken in by this bombs in the building story, which kind of morphed a bit until it's the form which it went to in 2007 with Mr. Gage.
Yeah. And, I
was just going to say that other variants involving nuclear devices, some people might be thinking, well, what about the nukes? It was obviously nukes that Judy Wood's disinformation. No, it wasn't nukes. It wasn't nuclear devices, not in the conventional sense at least, although there were nuclear effects, which we'll maybe come on to in a bit.
Yeah. Yeah, no, and I've sort of arrived at the conclusion, you know, looking at it, I've looked at the 9/11 engineers stuff and Dr. Judy Woods, and I'm open to the possibility that there's an element of several things going on, but I do believe the energy weapon was a factor. And I'm open to the fact that there could have been some explosions and some devices along with that, because I don't have enough technical knowledge, but so, you know, people who have been interviewed to claim to have heard bangs and noises, that there is the possibility that that happened alongside the other stuff that Dr. Judy Woods pointed out.
Well the thing that people overlook is that the energy weapon has the ability to create explosions.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, they overlook the difference between explosions and explosives.
Mm-hmm.
Two different things.
Yeah.
You put an egg in a microwave, flick the on switch for 2 minutes, leave it going for 2 minutes. The egg, which isn't an explosive, creates an explosion.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially that's what we saw in the towers. So this is where Dr. Wood's method is very helpful to follow, because it changes the way you think, and it encourages you to make the least number of assumptions. In other words, explosive sounds don't necessarily mean explosives were planted.
Yeah.
Two different things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So this is a key thing. Now, I say to people, I don't think Dr. Wood quite says it the way that I do, but she discusses that, you know, if you carry on reading through the book, as I think you will be doing,
mm-hmm,
you will see that, you know, she goes through the evidence of the kitchen sink approach, which is, I think it was a bit of everything. And I think that's extremely unlikely, because that involves more risk for the perpetrators. In other words, why would they need to plant explosives, which is a highly problematic in getting through security systems, when the energy weapon, as you will see from reading the book, can produce all of the effects which are heard and seen on the day, and many others which cannot be produced by standard explosives.
Mm-hmm.
And also, even if let's just say that somebody did plant some bombs in the building, which I'm pretty sure they didn't, but let's mm-hmm just say I'm wrong and they did, I think everyone knows how a bomb works, don't they? But I don't think hardly anybody knows how this sort of energy weapon works. In fact, we didn't know how it worked until 2007, although we have some idea since then how it works, and maybe we'll get into that.
Yeah.
And that's what the evidence teaches you, you see. This is, if you keep looking at the evidence and you gather enough of it over, say, 5 years of research, something like that, 6 years of research, then you can get a clearer understanding of what is involved, and you can rule things out as well, so you don't have to mm-hmm theorize on this particular issue.
Yeah. Okay, so do you want to run through the presentation that we've set up? Is that where you'd like to
So are you going to show that on your screen, or
you put the presentation up for us, please?
Okay. And would you just go to the next slide, or do I need to click anything?
Yeah, I can. We can do a share screen if we can't get Biggie to put it on.
Okay. No, no problem. I've got it here as well if you need me to share my screen.
Okay. I'll just...
I mean, may not go through all of these slides, but this is something which... Okay.
I mean, it might be, have you got it on your computer? Because you can do share screen on your on Zoom if you
want
to. Yeah,
what I'll do is I'll just try and spin it up on here then, and I'll just see if I can do that. So let me just bring you across to here so I can see you on there.
Probably easier if you control it from there as well, Andrew.
I'll try and... You see what that does.
Okay.
Does that work?
It says you started. There we go. Yeah, can see it.
Okay. So if I now change on to the next slide.
Yeah.
Don't need that one.
In
fact, let me just see if, maybe I've got to load up the other one because I think I've loaded the other wrong one. But that's at least a picture for somebody. And
Okay, well, while you're doing that, just for the viewers, this is the book that Dr. Judy Wood has written, and it's available from wheredidthetowersgo.com or also checktheevidence.com.
Yeah. And it's available on Amazon as well. It's a bit more pricey there. Where's that? I thought I had the right one loaded up. Just bear with me if I can.
It's okay.
See if I can get this up.
Okay. So while you're doing that, I'll just keep talking. Just with regard to 9/11, for me, it was as many people who were starting to look at this reality in a different way. It was a very pivotal point for me, and it was quite recent. I remember when Obama apparently had got Osama bin Laden in India, in Pakistan. I actually still was of the mindset that the Twin Towers had happened as a result of terrorists flying planes into it. So it is, you know, it's probably about 5 years ago when I started to look at it in a different light. And my first port of call was 9/11 architects and engineers. So if nothing else, even if they have been gatekeepers or steering us away from energy weapons, they have woken people like me up and started me looking beyond what was presented by them. So no matter what intentions behind it, I will say it's probably made a lot more people aware that things aren't what they seem. So I don't know what you're
Yes,
how you feel
I think
that.
That is true. And I mean, of course, the original film that I watched, which was called 9/11 The Great Illusion, it's quite possible that if I hadn't, you know, seen that, I wouldn't be here today, you know. So yeah, although there was false information in that, I think it obviously triggered me off, you know, to go and look further. So I've got a few slides here, and I hope you can see this still, yeah?
Yeah, can see it.
Very good. I probably won't go through all of this, and there are versions of this already up on YouTube. I've probably got about 5 or 6 different versions of this presentation over the last few years now. So, the two main areas which I think are important to consider are that there were no large Boeing crashes at the World Trade Center, which isn't so much discussed in Dr. Wood's book. You've got a little bit about that in the Where Did the Towers Go book, but the book is primarily focused on the destruction of the towers, which employed, you know, a type of energy weapon. And I have no doubt that that is the case. In that's what they were destroyed with. It's not a theory. And we've talked a little bit about how I became involved in this, and this was to do with the physics of the destruction, essentially. And this is an example of the sort of information you can find out there. If you go onto the BBC News website, you'll find things like this about the so-called pancake collapse, and they call it a theory, which it is, and it's not correct. And you get errors in graphics like this, which is at the BBC website, and it says that fire reaches 800 C, hot enough to melt steel. That's incorrect. Even though I'm not talking about melting, steel melts at 1500. So you get errors like that, you know, everywhere. And then, so how I got into it is I did this calculation. The buildings are 1,350 feet tall. That's not a calculation, that's a fact. Mm-hmm. You look at the construction, 47 enormous interior steel columns, 236 exterior steel columns, massive structures, hugely strong. And therefore, what you get is, if these buildings somehow decided to fall down, then if you take the top floor falling down, it should have taken 9.1 seconds to reach the ground. Mm-hmm. But the first one was about 8 seconds before, if you measured where the top was and then where it wasn't, in other words, where it should have been, you know, it was 8 seconds and it should have been 9.16. And that's without just, you know, just with air. And as Eric Hofstmid used to say, it's impossible for a building to fall through itself as quickly as it falls through the air. Mm-hmm. It's physically impossible.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you'll be able to see this clip playing. It might be a bit slow on the playback, but you're probably enough to get the idea. So this is the tower actually turning to dust. The whole thing turns to dust. The frame rate's probably a little bit slow, but all these clips are on YouTube for anybody that's not catching them very well here, or you know, just listening and not actually watching the screen. There are many clips of this on YouTube. We found a few more since I edited these clips together, probably about at least 7 or 8 years ago, probably longer. And the key thing is this, what we call the spire, which is this 70 stories high segment, which is there left when the building has disappeared, it's come apart. You can see it a little bit on this clip and on the next clip after this, you can see it even more clearly. Yes, it's a little bit blurred on this because I think it's sort of cutting down the resolution on the playback, which is what it has to do to transmit it. And some of these pieces, you know, as Dr. Wood points out in her presentations, you know, she does a better job of it than I do on this part of the presentation, you can actually see some of these pieces of steel turning to dust as they're falling through the air.
Yeah.
This is the most obvious one where you see the 70 stories of unsupported steel turning to dust. And what you're seeing essentially here is technology. This is technology at work. It isn't nukes, it's not bombs, it's not you know, explosives, it's nothing like that. It's something completely different. And as Dr. Wood observed, is this building collapsing? Is it burning up? You know, is it a gravity collapse? No, not at all. It's turning to dust. And explosives don't turn things to dust. They certainly don't turn steel to dust. They generally turn things into chunks. Some of them get obviously a little bit of dust, but not in the way that this was seen to happen. Let's just see. So I'll try. This should play as a sequence, hopefully. So this is a still image sequence of the same event. So we've got completely independent sources. I think we've got about 8 or 9 different sources of this set of images now, either video and so forth. And again, this is all discussed in more detail in the book that we've already mentioned. I don't know whether you can see my mouse pointer, but the...
Yeah, I can.
This is about one story high. This is 8 stories high. This is, I think, World Trade Center number 4, I think. This is World Trade Center number 7. And this is the remains of the World Trade Center, because this is before 5:20 in the evening. This was destroyed around about 5:20, 5:23 or something.
Mm-hmm.
So this is before 5:20 in the evening, probably about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, because of the shadows. Lack of shadows means the sun is almost overhead. So it's maybe like 1 o'clock, 1:30.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see the amount of material that's disappeared.
Yeah.
Seismic signature, which I haven't got in these slides, shows that the building disappeared. So explosive can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
And again, we have a picture. I think this was, this is actually, as you'll probably see in the book, this is the, like the bookmark that you get that goes inside the book. And it's like a site map, essentially. This also shows you that most of 7 buildings completely disappeared into dust. Explosives don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
Nuclear explosives don't do that. Not in this situation here that we have, where all the surrounding buildings are in pretty good shape, by and large. And very neat demolition for World Trade Center number 7 as well. And you can see here that it barely goes across the street. We've got a very compact pile, building number 7, and it's barely gone across the street. Now, I think you can play the Ocean Tower. I can probably play it on my screen if you want me to, but the Ocean Tower one, I think we're going to have number 2 video. So.
Hold on, yeah, we're quick. It's going to take 2 seconds to fire this up. Hold on. Speak. Your name, ma'am?
Barbara Crowley.
C-R-O-W-L-E-Y.
NYU Medical Center.
Okay, tell me what you know.
All I know at this point is they're trying to establish an outdoor hospital facility like we've set up at Chelsea Piers,
a triage
unit, for the personnel that are attending to the scene, not to the injured in the scene. They can't get in to get any casualties out at this time. They don't know the extent of it at this point. What we're doing now is going up to get medical supplies to bring down trauma physicians down here to set up the surgical unit and the triage unit down here. In addition to, if anybody out there can help, any vendors who have food or supplies, the firemen have no food, nothing but snacks. They need fluids, they need water, and they need protein foods. This is just the beginning of what they're facing. So we need masks. We need TB masks. Holy shit! What is it?
It just went down.
What just went down?
World Trade 7.
It did go down before.
No, 7, number 7.
Oh my God!
Okay. So I don't know whether you had a chance to watch that clip earlier, Joe, of the Ocean Tower and World Trade Center 7.
Yes, I did. Yeah.
So what are your thoughts?
Yeah, well, the one with the link that you sent through. Yeah.
Yes, yeah, it's where the lady's been interviewed. And
yes.
Then the tower goes down in the background.
Well, obviously, you can just see it completely falling straight behind her, can't you? And it's
right.
Like, and she shouts, "What was that?" And there was just the dust everywhere.
But what was missing?
As in?
From the clip. Can you see my screen again now?
Yes, I can now. But yeah, so just talk me through it again. What was missing?
Sorry. Well, there is no sound of explosives.
Oh, right. I'm with you. Right. I was thinking you meant visually. Sorry. Right.
No.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, so, no, there wasn't any explosives.
In other words, if you go on to that YouTube clip that I made, because I made that clip, Dr. Wood told me about the interview, and then I found it one day, or came up and somebody had sent me a link or something.
Right.
And people miss the obvious sometimes. And you cannot hear the sound of the explosives on the soundtrack of the video during the interview.
Yeah.
So people might say, oh, well, that's because it had a microphone which was tuned and set just to pick up the voices. But neither does the woman react. She can't hear it.
Yeah.
It's right behind her. Yet if you listen to how loud the Ocean Tower destruction is in the comparison clip, you can clearly hear that from probably further away than the lady is there. They would have heard it.
Yeah. So
people say to me, well, oh, Andrew, yes, World Trade Center 1 and 2 were energy weapon destruction, but definitely controlled demolition for number 7. Nope, wasn't. Mm-hmm. It was something else.
And if they've used that method, it would make sense they'd use it for all three buildings as well, isn't it?
Wouldn't it?
Yeah.
And also the seismic signature, which is in Dr. Wood's book, was barely indistinguishable from background from building number 7. It was the force of the seismic signature on the ground for the destruction of 7 was something like a jackhammer hitting the ground.
Yeah. And the science is just, like you say, the facts need challenging,
that's
don't
right.
they? You know.
That's right. You know, so people talk about Larry Silverstein and stuff, you know, he said pull it, which means therefore it was controlled demolition. No, it doesn't. It means that he said pull it.
Yeah.
And I don't dispute that he was covering up for what happened. He probably knew what was going to go down, or he probably knew that the building was going to be destroyed. That doesn't necessarily mean he would have known what method they used to destroy it.
Yeah.
So that's where you have to be careful about making too many assumptions.
Yeah.
And that's what Silverstein and many others like him have been put in place to do, to encourage you to make assumptions.
Yeah.
So this is just what I said a few earlier. Building, very neat destruction. If it had been a controlled demolition, which I've proved to you that it wasn't, it would have been the tallest building ever destroyed by controlled demolition, but it wasn't that. And this is a very peculiar thing which somebody sent to me not that long ago. This was a new discovery, actually. And you can see in this bottom image, you can see the pile, which is the same pile. I'll go back to the previous slide as here. So you can actually probably maybe even see part of this here. Maybe not. That might have been the next day, though, if we've got a barrier up.
Yeah.
Look at this top image. So in other words, this top image is before building number 7 was destroyed. And we have this strangely mangled bus here, which is very peculiar. But if you look at the bottom image, the bus is even more mangled and it's moved.
So it's been impacted by the energy. So disintegration and movement, which is the Hutchinson effect, isn't it?
Well, we'll get onto that, but that's it.
Yeah.
So there you are. This is a side-by-side comparison, hours apart. You can see these effects are not the effects of explosives.
Yeah.
This is a degradation. It's not an explosive destruction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We'll come back to this anyway, because I'm going to switch for a minute to this idea of the plane crashes. I'm not going to talk too much about that because we've only got limited time. But sections of the, in fact, architects and engineers still go along with the plane crash stories, but you just need to take a look at the evidence and say that these plane crash stories don't add up. I mean, this is supposed to be have come from a conflagrational fireball, and we have this intact inner tube here, and as Dr. Wood has pointed out, this damage here is consistent with being sawn off, it's not like broken off, you know. So it's, and here we have this picture that was in Stephen E. Jones's paper, and that I managed to identify these. This on the right here, on the bottom right, is on top of World Trade Center number 5. It's a satellite image, and you can actually see these pieces. If you look carefully, this is number 2, and this along here is number 3, going across here, and this is number 1 here, and we have the section of fuselage which isn't on here, so it looks like this was planted, and we have these strange circular holes in the top of World Trade Center 5 as well, which are discussed in Dr. Wood's book. I'm not going to talk about them much here. And then similarly, if you just look at these alleged plane crash damage, it's not consistent with a real plane crash, because you have these steel girders and aluminium exterior being cut through by 1/4-inch aluminium wing struts. And I asked people, if you fired a 4.44 Magnum handgun into a steel girder, what would happen to the bullet? Would it bounce off? Would it go through? Would it cause the girder to disappear? No, it wouldn't. That's why you have armor-piercing bullets. Mm-hmm. And any sign of any wing struts, ailerons, bits of luggage, bits of seat, in fact, any recognizable parts of a plane at all? No. There's nothing to tell you that a plane crashed there, except a plane-shaped hole. Now, again, I'm just covering this very briefly here because we haven't got a massive amount of time, but I advise people to look at Richard D. Hall's analysis. Which he published. He's actually done 3 versions of this now, with a major update in 2012 and a lesser update last year, at the end of last year. Because many people have tried to claim, for example, that buildings were in the wrong place, and that proves that it was planes were inserted by video fakery or CGI, which means computer-generated imagery. And several people have promoted this, such as Ace Baker, Simon Shack, and to a lesser extent, Jeff Hill. And I, again, was taken in a little bit by this. I thought the September Clues film was a very good set of evidence, but it's actually quite deceptive, as a chap called Mark Conlon has been going through more thoroughly most recently. And I've posted some articles that he's written on my website. I edited them a little bit, just to make them read a little bit better. Mm-hmm. So I would advise people to check out Richard D. Hall's analysis, which anybody who wants any of these links, just write to me at checktheevidence.com, send me an email, and I'll send you any of the information you can't find, you know, of your own accord. And basically, I have come to the conclusion that the plane crashes were essentially illusions. People did see planes, and indeed I think from Richard Hall's analysis, particularly the main reason for him doing it was to show that plane-shaped objects were filmed. It appears that these people with the amateur video cameras, and I think there were about 40 or 50 of them, really did film an object that looked like a plane, but it couldn't have been a real plane because it didn't damage the tower in a way that a real plane would have.
Can I add to that, Andrew? I did a client, because I was aware of, you know, the people that saying there weren't real planes and it was CGI and things like that. And then
right.
I got a client who was still suffering with significant trauma actually being at 9/11. And she talked through running to the underground, you know, to the subway. And she actually did see the plane. And I did, I said, oh, so you actually saw a plane then? I didn't want to go into the, you know, the illusion bit with her. And she said, yes, I saw the plane. So in her mindset and in her memory of the experience, she saw a plane flying into the second tower.
Right. And I've had exactly the same experience with speaking to a couple of people who saw it. Or speaking to one chap phoned into the program, and he wasn't angry with me or anything like that. He was just quite straightforward about it. Yeah, I saw it. I think he was coming out of the subway and looking up, and he saw it. But then I talked to another person who was watching it from further away, and they were in the direct line of sight of Flight 175. That's the second one, and they didn't see it. They didn't see it. And that is explained by this, I call it image projection technology. Some people call it hologram technology, and it could be something close to that or more accurately described as that. But I've chosen not to call it that for better or for worse. And it would appear that this image projection technology doesn't give, 100% accurate image from all angles, but it was obviously good enough to do what needed to be done to create the illusion, which has stood as fact for majority of the population for 15 years. You might be able to see this is a clip. This was from Luke Corsheen. And there's another clip here, and I'll run these at slow motion in the next part of the clip. And the reason for running these clips is there are anomalies which I'll highlight here. If you slow them down and do a frame by frame, you will see that in certain frames, the wings appear to disappear. And I don't think this is just an interlace or video artifact effect. This is perhaps the clearest one. But again, this is a little unclear on this playback. So, I've got these on my channel. Mm-hmm. It's some very strange things happening with these images. That plane should be light colored, and it's actually dark. Some strange sort of effects of shadows, which shouldn't really be there. It's like a black plane. In other videos, it looks like a silver plane, and so forth. And I did a witness study as well. This is one of the, as I tell people, an original bit of research that I did, looking at the witness accounts. And I found a sample of 117 people who were at or near the World Trade Center buildings at, near, or inside the World Trade Center buildings at the time of the impact of Flight 175, the alleged impact. But only 20% of those people saw it, and only about 21% heard the alleged second plane, and only 8.3% of them heard and saw the plane. And that's out of a sample of 117. That's, some people have misquoted that and said that it was only 170, only 20 people saw it or something. They misquoted it. No, that's not what I've written. That was out of a sample of 117 witnesses who should have been able to see it or been in a position where they could have seen it, because they reported their location in the witness account as, on Vesey Street, Vesey Street, or on Broadway, West Broadway, any street that was identifiable as near the World Trade Center. Mm-hmm. And then you've got this strange problems with the accounts, in that the firefighters say, we start heading down the block and we get down to, I guess, about Church Street, and the second plane hit. And I remember being just underneath. I never heard the motor of the plane, the sound of the engines. We just heard the explosion. You felt the explosion. And looking straight up and seeing that fireball you see on the news, but we're underneath looking up now at it. There's a few accounts like that where they don't see it when they should have seen it, or they don't hear it, or they don't realize a plane was involved until the next day. There's a couple of them that say that. So this is all very peculiar. And people like Simon Schack have then used this evidence to say, well, no one died on 9/11. All the videos are fake. All the images are fake. So I don't know what he thinks happened. This, I think, is, again, the effect of technology at work. Mm-hmm. So again, going back to some of the destruction, because it wasn't planes, we see all this dust. It's, you know, almost ankle deep in some places. Yet the paper is, you know, still intact. How is that possible? If it was explosives and fire and a big conflagration of that nature, how is it possible for the paper to have survived in this quantity? And how are these girders destroyed with no fiery explosions? There's no explosions going off here. Mm-hmm. No bright flashes. It's just turning to dust. This is Stephen E. Jones tried to change this. I might be able to show you later. And this is a key picture as well that Dr. Wood has talked about many, many times, where we have this ambulance here in front of the World Trade Center. Oops, sorry. Have this ambulance here. The door's a bit bashed up, but the roof isn't crushed in. It's still in relatively good shape, yet it should have had 2 quarter-mile-high buildings on top of it. And as you read in the book, additional to this, not far from where this picture was taken, 14 people survived, the firefighters in Stairwell B. How is that possible that they survived when they had 100 stories of building land on top of them? It's because 100 stories of building didn't land on top of them. It should have, but it didn't. And, so all the debris went in the basements, Andrew, the trolls will say. Nope. This is from inside the basements. People went down there to try and rescue somebody. And stuff survived in the basements. Wasn't crushed. There were figures taken out of the Warner Brothers store, Bugs Bunny and others there somewhere in the book. So the basement levels were, okay, there's stuff in there. There's, you know, bits and pieces. But there isn't 110 stories of building packed into 9 stories of basement. No way. Mm-hmm. They're walking around. And, of course, this is one area which Dr. Wood brought to light, I think, originally around about 2004, 2005 time frame. And they worked hard to cover this up. Toasted cars have very strange effects on cars. Toast doesn't mean heat necessarily. It means that they're damaged beyond repair. And you see on the right what looks like burnt car, but it's actually not, because the upholstery is still intact. And the window molding is intact as well. So what's going on here? And here on the left, we have this inflated tire, but with this melted, wilted door frame. And on another car, I haven't got a picture in this slide, but Dr. Wood has talked about this. I don't think I've got a picture here. Maybe I have. No, I haven't. We'll come to the next slide in a minute and then maybe go for the break.
Yeah.
In another of these slides, we've got the sort of polycarbonate lighting units on top, which are essentially, you know, you can melt them in a bit higher temperature than regular plastic, but they're all intact. Yet the rest of the car is kind of like this. Mm-hmm. You'll see that in some of the other pictures.
Yeah.
And I think I'll just show you this picture now. When Dr. Wood brought the car evidence out, people immediately said, oh, toasted cars. Well, actually what happened with those is they were all towed there. They were next to the World Trade Center. There was a big fire. from the destruction, the cars caught fire, and then they were towed to various places. Nope. That is another lie to protect somebody's technology. We see in this image here that these cars are in the same place. These were taken before and after the destruction of the towers, or during the destruction and then slightly later in the day. And you particularly notice the black car that I've highlighted. It's perfectly fine. Mm-hmm. Bit of dust in this, in the bright lighter image.
Yeah.
And then next to it, you see one that's completely rusted. Mm-hmm. How is this possible? This proves, this picture alone proves that the official story is false, and it proves that there are armies of liars and trolls trying to cover up this evidence that I'm showing you now. And these people should be ashamed of themselves. Ashamed of themselves. And I hope they consider carefully what they are doing and what they are saying, because it is extremely deceptive, damaging, etc.
The truth will out. It always does.
The truth has outed.
People
it's just that we need to understand what is causing these people to lie about this evidence and why they are doing it.
Yeah, and I think, you know, on that, before we go to break, there are some that genuinely buy the official story, because, you know, this is a step too far, because, you know, when you look at energy weapons, you're going into the realms of quantum physics and completely, you know, a different level of reality, aren't you, with the energy?
Well, I know what you mean. It's off most people's radar screen, and you are looking at, it's actually not necessarily even quantum physics, because, then that's a whole other conversation about quantum physics. But yeah, I mean, I know precisely what you mean, but we're just talking about evidence here right now.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm just like, you know,
yeah,
sort of coming back at what you've just said about these people ought to be ashamed of themselves. I think there are some. Some of them
should be. Other people, as you say, they haven't studied it.
Yeah.
And but some of them have studied it, and they're lying about it. We'll get onto that more in the second half. Yeah.
Okay. So on that note, would you like to have a 10-minute break, play the video, and then we'll come back in 10 minutes time?
Sure.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank
so we'll see you all in 10 minutes time. Thank you, Biggie.
Great.
Where did the towers go?
It's undeniable that the buildings went away.
Where is all the rubble? It seems so flattened.
If they had collapsed to the ground, you'd have a pile of debris that would correspond to 210-story buildings. That didn't happen.
Where did the towers go?
There ain't enough rubble. Where are they?
There's no debris.
You just can't account for the missing material.
Engineers at the firm that built the building's best guess to account for the missing 1,200 feet of material from each tower is that large portions simply vaporized.
And look at those pictures just hours after the event, and there was nothing there.
You had a little bit of rubble, but you didn't have 210-story buildings piled up there.
That's the part that's crazy. It's just that's all that's left.
People who have been right down next to the base of what was the Trade Towers say there's virtually nothing left. Maybe a few flights of stairs, a few stories of one of the buildings.
110 stories at ground level.
110 stories at ground level.
I've got a picture of Building 7 in the background still standing and fuming away. It went away at 5:20 that day. So we know it's before 5:20 on 9/11. You're looking straight over from West Street, and you should see a 110-story building blocking your view. But there's just nothing there, right down to the ground. There's an ambulance that was parked in front of Tower 1 on West Street.
Okay.
And Tower 1's not there anymore. But the ambulance is there.
That should have been obliterated too, don't you think?
Why isn't the ambulance crushed?
It's obvious there's a big lack of material there.
The North Tower is right here. You see, you just have that shell of the facade there. And here's the South Tower is right here. And there's the center of where the South Tower stood.
Where the hell did these buildings go?
That's the all that's standing of the Twin Towers right now in the background. That's all that's standing. That's it. That's all that's left.
Every building with the WTC prefix was destroyed that day. It wasn't two towers. It wasn't three towers. It wasn't four towers. It wasn't five buildings, six buildings. It was seven buildings.
Usually mainstream, they would tell you, oh, Mel, but that's it's just all that debris that bumped into those buildings that were in the, you know, close proximity. So they probably had structural damage and they had to be demolished.
Well, then let's go see that debris that bumped into them. It doesn't exist.
Look at WTC 6.
Approximately 50% of the building's mass went away. It wasn't the outer mass. It was this hole cut in the middle. Down to ground level. There's nothing there.
Some people say, well, stuff must have fallen in it. Well, if debris fell in it and collapsed it down, you look in the bottom of the hole, you should see something. There wasn't much of anything left of the building.
You don't see toilets, you don't see desks, you really don't see anything.
Nothing that you would recognize as being part of something in an office.
Aside from huge pieces of twisted steel from the towers, there was little that was recognizable in the debris. No one had ever seen anything like it.
I mean, you didn't find a shard of glass, anything that looked like would be used by a person, you just didn't see.
All there was powdered debris and metal.
We're talking here about 43,600 windows, 600,000 square feet of glass, 200,000 tons of structural steel, 5 million square feet of gypsum, 6 acres of marble, and 425,000 cubic yards of concrete, turned in good part into a cloud.
Perhaps the most astonishing object Shate found is something there should have been thousands of. This one probably only survived because it was in the basement. It belonged to an ice cream store.
you can see what remains of the file folders that were inside.
It was the only file cabinet found. They were able to identify what store it was from, and they called up the store owner and said, hey, we got your money. And they gave them their money.
When you have paper flying, but you can't see a toilet, a desk, or anything else.
You had all this paper flying all over Manhattan, and yet, in the rubble, there wasn't one file cabinet wrecked or anything. I think they found one.
The most amazing part of it is those two little pimples where there's an arrow that points that people survived here.
And that's like right under the tower.
Mickey Cross feared they would all be dead before anyone found them.
I had no idea what was over us. I'm thinking 110 stories. How much rubble that is, how, if they start pulling it apart, how long would it take for them to get to us?
They assumed they were buried under such debris that they'd be dead by the time anyone found them.
But then the strangest thing happened. This beam of sunlight came right in on us.
After the dust settled, they looked up and saw blue sky.
I'm like amazed now. 110-story building above us, and I'm looking up at the sun.
The descriptions they gave were not of a building falling on top of them, or not of bombs exploding around them. Wasn't high heat. They didn't get cooked. They didn't get squashed. I looked up and said, guys, there used to be 106 floors above us, and now I'm seeing sunshine. There's nothing above us. That big building doesn't exist. These are the biggest office buildings in the world, and I didn't see one desk, one chair, one phone, nothing. Nothing much left. There's a few beams here and there, a few columns, but it's pretty much at ground level.
Where did the towers go?
Where did the towers go?
Where did the buildings go?
Where did the towers go?
10 years you've been looking at this evidence, and you've pinned it down, and you've pinned it down, and where'd it go?
Welcome back, everybody. I hope you've had a nice break and enjoyed the video. And I'm going to hand straight back over to Andrew just to go back through the presentation to discuss the elements of what Dr. Judy Wood's findings have proven. So over to you, Andrew.
Thank you very much, Joe. Before we just go back into the slides, just a few comments about the video. And I mean, that was a segment from the Irrefutable film, which is by Adam Dwyer. And very worthwhile watching that. I give out DVDs of that film. It's about 50 minutes long. And, you can see much more evidence in that in quite a compact form. Some people like that film because it's got bits of Matrix in and stuff like that. It's visually appealing. Adam Dwyer, who made it, spent a long time making that. He's listened to an awful lot of clips of Dr. Wood and myself and several other people, actually. You've realized that what I'm telling you tonight is the truth and nothing but the truth, and reveals something very important, which a lot of people either don't want to talk about, don't want to spend the effort getting their head around, or whatever other reason. But it ultimately has a silver lining, which, you know, again, we'll try and come to in the remainder of the time that we've got tonight. And it's kind of follow on, the film sort of fitted in a little bit to what, well, fitted in quite well to what I'd presented before the break. And to follow on from that bit of film, I'll now try and share my screen again. If I go back to that and just do share my screen again. Hopefully this will work again. So hopefully you can see the strange cars here. And without making it too obvious, why are some of these cars upside down? This is something that's very strange and not talked about by hardly anybody, actually, apart from Dr. Wood and myself and Richard D. Hall. You know, you take your Chris Berlins and your Ken O'Keefe's, they don't talk about this. Not even just to draw attention to it. I'm not asking them to explain it or talk about energy weapons. I'm just asking them to talk about it, the evidence.
Can I just be a devil's advocate and ask a question? Mm-hmm. Is it because they've not got an engineering background and it doesn't mean
doesn't
anything
matter.
To them?
Doesn't matter. They should be able to talk about anomalies. Mm-hmm. I, of course, a technical background helps, but, you know, how technical do you need to be to know whether a car is upside down or not? No.
I think, you know, like seizures. From a layperson, I've not got a technical background. And you see all these films with, you know, cars blowing up and turning over. So the perception of, that people have with an explosion that vehicles can be shifted to another. I know why we'd have to see Dr. Judy Wood's videos, but for someone who might not have seen Judy's videos.
This is it. This is another problem with what Hollywood movies do to your mind. They actually put certain images in certain contexts. And then when you see real images, which look to be in a similar context, perhaps, that again is part of the process of encouraging you to make assumptions. That process is ongoing. It's not just because Bush goes on TV and says, Bin Laden done it. That's only one part of the strategy for encouraging you to make assumptions. It's one that goes right throughout, you know, the whole televisual media experience. And Dr. Wood, again, make some good observations, such as why is only one pane of glass broken here? And there are several examples like this that wouldn't happen if these were broken by projectiles. And in fact, these windows weren't broken by projectiles. In other words, by projectiles, I mean bits of rubble flying out from, you know, the destruction of the towers. This was something else.
Yeah.
Same here. Whoops, sorry.
Yeah, so the inner frame. The inner glass hasn't broken.
Yeah, correct. And I think we've got two or three other examples just the same. So we've mentioned this several times tonight. I think what we're going to try and do, as mentioned before, Joe, is get Dr. Wood on to go through this more thoroughly, a little bit better than I can do it. But the important thing to realise at the end of all this is that this is energy technology. And it's actually, people say, well, okay, Andrew, you say it's energy technology, free energy technology. Why? How is it free? Why is it free? Well, if you look at the destruction of any object, it doesn't just happen normally. It doesn't, an object doesn't get destroyed spontaneously. In other words, you have to put energy into that object to destroy it. So you have to, you know, burn it or fire something at it or whatever. And we know that nothing was fired at the towers, at least nothing visible, no projectiles. We know that explosives weren't in there. You know, we showed that building number 7 had a silent disappearance. And essentially the towers were also very, not silent disappearance, but very quiet relative to the enormous level of destruction. So what are we talking about? We're talking about energy coming from, open quote, somewhere else. Energy being used to change materials. Small amounts of energy being used to induce large changes. And this is something which has been done by this chap, John Hutchison, who's been doing it for quite a number of years. He started in the late 70s, progressed in the early 80s. And he was able to produce these effects, jellification of metal, bending, fracturing of metal, levitation. What does that remind you of? Transmutation. And we'll try and come back to that. Fuming, which isn't the same as smoke necessarily. Disappearance of things. What does that remind us of? Fusing of dissimilar materials. For example, metal and wood. We've got a few examples of that from the World Trade Center, but not sure I'll get time to go through all of that. And then we have this as well. Weird fires. You see on the bottom right there, a firefighter almost walking into that fire. And we have a raging car fire next to unburned paper in the top picture. And on the left, over to the left, we have one of John Hutchison's experiments, which he did in 2006. I got the wrong date on this video. Should have redone the caption, but never got around to it. So I made this 9 years ago now, I think, almost. We can see here that what John Hutchison is doing is actually, I didn't really explain what he does. He uses a combination of equipment to generate electrostatic, electromagnetic, and radio fields, RF fields, in his laboratory, which was actually in his apartment for a number of years. And he mixes together these different types of energy, electromagnetic radiation, electrostatic fields, microwaves. He's even used a radioactive source. And these are the sorts of effects he's produced. Look at those weird fires. So all the effects that John Hutchison produces were seen at the World Trade Center. Some people think that John Hutchison is a fraudster. Really? Well, how is it that he actually managed to create the same effects as were seen at the World Trade Center by fraudulent methods, even though he had no knowledge of what those effects were? At least not until we contacted him.
What is Hutchinson's background? Is he a scientist?
He's what you call an experimental physicist. He hasn't done any formal degrees, but being outside the academic system, has enabled him to just look at what he sees, study what he sees, and develop his experimental techniques to focus in on what these effects were. You know, and this mm-hmm. was sort of like 10 years' work that he developed the ability through using bits of technology to achieve effects like this. The thing on the left there is a 3-inch copper beam, or bar, I should say, 3 inches in diameter, which has been put in his sample area and left with the energy beam switched on. And over a period of time, you know, it's a bit hit and miss, but he was able to regularly produce effects within a few minutes, which perfected his setup. And there you see on the right, beam from the World Trade Center, which was held by WJE. So hopefully fairly obvious. And metal samples from John on the left, World Trade Center on the right, this sort of jellification effect, this delamination, the metal breaking up into layers. These sorts of effects were seen in the World Trade Center steel. And he produces levitation. I'm not going to play the video, but John can produce levitation effects. You can watch various YouTube videos. This is just one that he gave us. There are several that he's done that are on YouTube. Effects on metal, similar to what we've seen at the World Trade Center. I'm not going to play this clip because it's too long. David Hanscher was levitated. Michael Macko, I realized I couldn't get out from under the collapse. I dove under an ESU truck that was facing north on the west side of West Street. So there again, you know, he says exactly where he was. I dove under that and waited for the building to come down. When the building did come down, I actually thought I was trapped and the truck was blown off me, pushed off me, I guess. It was not there. At that point, I was just really shocked and didn't know what was going on at that point. I didn't know. I was really, really shocked. So what happened to this truck? How can it have been pushed off him and he survived? Because there were some very strange levitation effects going on. Rust effects were seen. These were also seen in John Hutchison's experiments. This is a stainless steel bar which has been put in the sample area, the experimental area. And this is what happens to it. Various other metals seem to form on the surface, which is what we'll come back to. And the other thing which even people like Dame Wigington, who likes to talk about geoengineering, and Max Bliss, who also likes to talk about geoengineering, they won't talk about this. Because Dr. Wood, in her study of the destruction of the World Trade Center, was looking at this effects of the plume, and she was looking for pictures of this plume of material rising up into the atmosphere, and it did rise up very high, which was quite unusual, because if you get controlled demolitions, the material doesn't rise up into the upper atmosphere like you can see here. It generally stays at a fairly low level. But when she was looking at these images, she wanted to find like more images like this, of this strange path of this material going up into the atmosphere. And so she went to look for satellite pictures, and this is what she found. Pictures of Hurricane Erin on 9/11. Who talked about that? Answer, hardly anyone. Hardly anyone talks about this even now. Even the people who talk about chemtrails. Even the Weather War 101 channel made a video about Hurricane Erin on 9/11. They didn't even mention Dr. Wood's book or research on this as to why it was there. Did not mention it. Go and check it out if you don't believe me. What's this pentacle in the middle? Sort of suggestive of a pentacle, a five-sided shape here. Not quite a pentagon, because the angles aren't equal. Again, it's just suggestive. So Hurricane Erin formed around about 1st of September. I was going to make a whole video about this because I've collected some stuff, but I just haven't got around to it. Hit Bermuda on the 7th, did a bit of damage. CNN said it's going out to sea. And it did go out to sea. A beeline for New York City, and it actually was about 500, the eye was about 500 miles offshore. The outer bands were hitting Cape Cod round about here, and the effects were felt at all three New York airports, JFK, LaGuardia and Newark. They reported dry thunder, which means that the storm effects were felt there. And it made a right-hand turn on the 12th of September and went off out towards Newfoundland. It moved at its slowest speed during the events of 9/11, reached its widest extent during the events of 9/11. No one talks about it, not to this date. We've been talking about it for 9 years. Hardly anybody else talks about it.
And it's so relevant to the, I mean, is my understanding correct here, Andrew, that it's the energy from the hurricane that's been utilized in the energy?
Well, not necessarily. The best we can really say is that hurricanes and storm systems have an electrical field associated with them. It's like a static field. And that's exactly what John Hutchison uses in his experiments. He uses a Van de Graaff generator or a Tesla coil to generate an electrostatic field. So it would appear that whatever they were doing, whatever method they were using to destroy the World Trade Center, was probably utilizing the static field from the hurricane. But there are a number of ways that this could have been significant. That's just one of them. There's a number of possibilities in that, you know, they may have somehow used the electrostatic energy to create some other effect first, which then triggered, you know, something else.
So this is the question that I'm trying to get my head around here as a layperson. Would the electrostatic effect create the hurricane, or did they create the hurricane to utilize the electrostatic effect?
We don't know. Right. I mean, the honest answer, we don't know. All we know is that the hurricane was there. It moved as it did. It was hurricane season. Did they somehow create the hurricane from scratch? Don't know. Did they steer it? Very likely. I mean, they didn't just kind of wait for a particular hurricane to move in that particular way and then decide to destroy, oh yeah, we'll destroy the World Trade Center. It would appear that the destruction of the World Trade Center was planned many years in advance of the actual event. Yeah. So I would imagine basically that they were probably waiting for a storm system around about the right time, and then they basically arranged its development and steered it in the past. That's what I think. I mean, I don't think you'll find a statement like that in Dr. Wood's book. She'll just tell you that the storm was there, what path it took, and what other effects, you know, it might have been used to create.
Yeah, I mean, and this, I suppose some of the things that I'm looking at here is some of the predictive programming that you've seen. I don't know if you've seen the Back to the Future that was made in the 1980s.
Oh, yes.
So obviously the date was planned, yeah, because the predictive programming was around that actual date, wasn't it?
Well, yes, I mean, the date was important. I you know, that's a whole other conversation, but yes. You know, I mean, what we're looking at here, for example, just talking about this particular slide, for example, where we have materials merging together, we're talking about changes in materials, and we'll hopefully get onto this in a bit more in a little bit in a couple of minutes. We're talking about alchemy,
yeah,
and then you know you go from alchemy to black magic, to rituals,
yeah,
to numerology,
yeah.
It's all there, you know. Dr. Wood doesn't talk about that, but I will talk about it from time to time for my limited knowledge of it. You know, again, I'm from an engineering background. I don't know a lot about black magic, but I've read and studied enough to feel that there is very much something in it, and that it played a part in the in the events of 9/11 too.
Absolutely, you know,
at some level. Not what we're talking about here tonight, but here we get these strange effects on wood, you know, this wood going through wood, this straw going into trees, which people will claim is a sort of wind effect. No, these materials are actually changing in some way, and this was a stainless steel knife merging with an aluminium block in one of John's experiments, which he then sliced through with a grinder to see where the join was.
It's changing the behavior heat. Of matter, isn't it?
Correct. Exactly. That's exactly what it's doing. And you see levitation with tornadoes and stuff as well. So this is involved. So we've shown that. So we're talking about field effects here. We're talking about energy field effects, electrostatic field, magnetic field, and possibly microwaves, which we haven't talked about tonight. But Dr. Wood verified that energy effects were happening. And you can see these energy effects in changes in the Earth's magnetic field, which she collected the data from these detectors in Alaska, in various places from the University of Alaska. She made a spreadsheet of this, and you'll see that at 8:46, we have this dip in the Earth's magnetic field, and that corresponds to this alleged first impact of the Flight 11. I think was the other flight that was allegedly hit the World Trade Center. This also lends strong support to the other evidence that shows that this wasn't a plane crash, because a plane crash would not affect the Earth's magnetic field like this. This is an energy effect. In other words, whatever created the first hole was an energy effect. So I've been through some of the evidence fairly quickly, and apologies if it's a bit disjointed or jumpy, etc. You know, there are other videos that you can watch, but I wanted to talk particularly about these two people, Jim Fetzer and Stephen E. Jones, because they invited me to join this group at the end of 2005, which they'd set up at the suggestion of David Ray Griffin, apparently, I think, or probably he was involved in the setup, Scholars for 9/11 Truth, and anybody that's familiar with Masonic symbolism, you can see perhaps I wasn't really familiar with that when this was set up. Mm-hmm. Not as familiar as I am now, anyway. Now, Jones invited me to join this scholars group. He sent me an email at the end of 2005 and suggested I be invited in as a full member. And I helped Jones with his one of his presentations a little bit, just not in, you know, any major content, but I made a video of it and distributed DVDs, and then he asked me to edit a video clip, which I did for him, and that turned out that I was helping to promote disinformation. I was used to promote disinformation through Jones, at Jones's request. Now, he was the guy who came out with this thermite story. He was the guy that first put that out into the community back in 2006, and he used people like me and other innocent members of the scholars group to promulgate that theory, which is still in use today. So I've more or less discussed that, yeah. He was saying that the thermite was used to melt through the steel columns to make the towers fall down. That was essentially what he was saying. He didn't, you know, put it in sort of simple terms there. And he went through a set of evidence in this paper, which appeared to support this. And yeah, I'll just see if this will play. We're going to play. Yeah, these will sort of play, I think. Okay. And this clip on the left was the one that I made for Jones. And I think I also gave him this other clip or something, where you see this material coming out of the World Trade Center, and you compare that with this thermite reaction. But what you don't tend to compare, and I didn't compare, was the scale involved. I mean, on the right hand side, you've got a little plant pot of material at fairly close range. And on the left, you've got an enormous building. You think of how much thermite would have been needed to do the destruction. New York would have been lit up like it had never been lit up before or since.
I can't see the image on the right, Andrew. I can see the left one.
Can you not? No, okay.
The right one's not playing.
Oh, well, it might be just the way that this video is configured on this thing.
Yeah.
But basically, it's okay, so I've got a still of it here, so hopefully you can see the stills there. You can see those stills, right?
Yes, I can.
Yeah. So you can see the comparison here with the stills, and that this looks like it's the same thing. This is essentially what Jones was trying to get me to highlight. And I thought I was doing the right thing. Yeah, and then there was a split in the scholars group. I've written all this up. And they had this fake bust up between Jones and Fetzer, pretending that Jones was on one side and Fetzer on the other. Fetzer kind of seemed to be the good guy at that point, and he and myself and Dr. Judy Wood and several others were working as a separate group, and Jones went off and did this other website, etc. But it was all just a scam. I mean, I've written about that, and I don't want to go into that in detail here, because it's all in my book, in my free book.
So from a person looking on the outside looking in, it was intentional to cause confusion.
Yes.
And the reason they started these groups, they realised there was some awareness coming into the public domain, so they wanted to make sure they controlled it.
Correct. They were controlling the debate and directing the perception of people, you know, not allowing people to reclaim their perception. They created fake fights, arguments, to stop people talking about the evidence. In fact, just to give you a quick example of that, Fetzer wanted to argue about intellectual property rights of the Scholars for 9/11 Truth domain name, rather than furthering Dr. Wood's research and maybe helping to get her book published. He never helped with that. Neither did Jones. Mm-hmm. And instead, this thermite thing, you know, morphed and evolved and is still argued about today. So you've had thermite, thermate, superthermite, nanothermite, paint-on-thermite, active thermitic materials, and iron-rich microspheres. They're some of the things that have been thrown in the pot. But the thing that all those things disregard is that all those forms of thermite don't turn things to dust, which is what happened to the towers. Therefore, they are irrelevant. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, divide, squabble, and cover up. Yeah, I'm going to skip over this because we won't have time on that. So we want to get to this now. I put a big flashing title here. This is the key. This is the key. And in fact, this, you know, it begins to tie in with the alchemical thing as well, and also energy and consciousness as well is essentially involved in this, not perhaps from this point, but Jones, you see, this Jones fellow, he was a physics professor from Brigham Young University, and guess what he was involved in? He was involved in the study and research of cold fusion. No, some people know what I'm talking about when I mention cold fusion, some don't. It's actually a poorly understood phenomenon, which was discovered, actually I think it was discovered in the 1930s originally, and it was then rediscovered by Stanley Pons and Martin Fleischmann around about 1985. They were electrochemists working with the experimental setup, which was actually an electrolysis experiment. Electrolysis means breakdown by electricity. And they found that under certain conditions, with a certain type of electrode and so forth, and a certain type of lithium hydroxide fluid, they would get out more energy from their cell than was put into it. And the rest of the physics community said, no, you can't do that. That's impossible. You must have made a mistake. And that is the assumption to this day, that Pons and Fleischmann were wrong, and they didn't produce any excess heat. They were just blundering idiots. That's what's the popular mainstream view. However, if you watch the heavy Watergate video, which is on YouTube, it's not on Google Video, this is not, it shows how old the slide is, you will find, let's see if...
Since Pons and Fleischmann were both well aware of the pitfalls of premature publicity, why would they bypass the accepted conventions of the previous system and announce
it? Can't really hear that.
See if I can... Yeah, so what that this is, you see Jones in this clip, because I haven't got time to divert the sound through, and it is possible, but I'm not so familiar with the software. So this clip describes how Jones actually prevented Pons and Fleischmann from patenting their technique, their experiments. And you see him in the video here, this was made in year 2000. So this is before 9/11 actually happened, this video was made. So I didn't find out about Jones's connection to cold fusion until about 2007, in other words, about 18 months after I first got to know him.
Right.
So Jones is a key figure in the 9/11 cover-up, because his involvement in the 9/11 cover-up and the cold fusion cover-up essentially proves the link. That is not a coincidence. And I've got a lot more on this as well, which we don't have time to cover. And then if you look at people who helped write the technical reports about the destruction of the World Trade Center, there were 23 contractors. In other words, just a quick description of that. People are generally more familiar with the 9/11 Commission report, which is this 500-page document called the 9/11 Commission Report. That's what it's called. And it talks about all the security failures and how the hijackers, you know, did this and did that, and why they were able to hijack these aircraft, blah, 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 lie, lie, lie. But people are less aware of the 10,000 pages of technical reports regarding the destruction of the World Trade Center. NIST that produced these used 23 contractors, and among them were several big defense contractors, such as Science Applications International Corporation and Applied Research Associates. And this we discovered when Dr. Wood was filing a QTAM case, or actually filing a request for correction, to get the NIST reports corrected, because they were wrong, provably wrong, and NIST actually admitted that they committed science fraud in a letter to Dr. Judy Wood in 2007. Of course, they didn't call it science fraud. They said that they didn't investigate the reason for the collapse. They only investigated the events up to the point of collapse. And that's in a letter from Dr. Catherine Fletcher to Dr. Wood, which I believe is on the website somewhere. But the peculiar thing is about these contractors that were involved in writing the technical reports is they were both doing research into directed energy weapons, funnily enough. This is also something else that no one else talks about. I don't think I've heard anyone else talking about this outside of myself, Dr. Wood, and Richard D. Hall. I don't think I've heard anyone even mention it, or my name, or Dr. Wood's name in relation to this study. No. And then, you know, we're now, 9 years down the line from when we made this information public, almost 9 years. Almost 10 years, actually. I'm going back to this architects group. Well, when that information I just told you about was, you know, basically put out in 2007, this is when the architects and engineers group was established. That was established in 2007. Their website sort of, I think the domain name was set up in 2006. If you look at the Whois records, you could find that. But the actual website went live around about the time that Dr. Wood filed her court case in 2007. And they worked very hard to try and debunk what's on the website and what was in the RFC. And they, in fact, filed their own RFC, the request for correction. So the legal action that Dr. Wood actually started and laid a foundation with a request for correction, architects and engineers followed a similar path 3 weeks after Dr. Wood did. But, and this is a big but, they didn't mention thermite in their submission at all, whereas Dr. Wood mentioned energy effects and so forth because she knew that that was true. They didn't mention molten metals and they didn't mention thermite in their request for correction. And we have proof that this is a, several ways that this is a cover-up outfit, because we had a friend called Abraham Hafiz Rodriguez. He's a medical student. He's now a doctor of neurology. This was several years ago that he wrote to us. And he wrote to architects and engineers and said, have you heard about Dr. Wood's research? And then he later, some weeks later, discovered that they deleted his name from their petition. And they wrote back to him saying, we decided to remove you from our list of petition signers because whether you knew it or not, we have chosen to carefully limit the scope of our message to the collapse of the World Trade Center and the need for a new investigation that would specifically consider the use of explosives in bringing it down. There's that word again. Our message is displayed on our website and in the petition and our mission statement. The evidence supporting our message is also found on our website, which I'm sure you've seen since you signed our petition. So they're only considering the use of explosives, which means that they're only considering explanations which are untrue and are wrong, because we've already shown tonight and could go into further detail if required to show that explosives were not the cause of the destruction of the World Trade Center. And I just want to also switch to another screen. Can you see this web page now that I've got up?
Can, it's not very clear. It's not got a full screen.
Is it?
Yeah, I can see it, yeah.
Okay. So I just want to show, this is on my website, so people can find this article. And you see this was posted on the 3rd of August 2014, so 2.5 years ago. Here is a content page listing from Where Did the Towers Go? Chapter 7 talks about conventional controlled demolition bombs in the building, and it talks about ignition temperatures, and it talks about Section D, thermite. You see it there on the index page. So Dr. Wood does mention thermite in the book. Now, if I were to play you these audio clips, we haven't got time, but you can go to the page. Richard Gage claims that Dr. Wood ignores the evidence of thermite. Richard Gage is a liar. He is a liar, folks. Anybody who's following him should unfollow him now. Send him this web page and ask him if it's to correct it. I was given a copy of a check signed by Mr. Richard Gage proving that he bought a copy of Where Did the Towers Go? He has a copy of this book. He bought it from Matthew Nowes, who realized that Richard Gage was a liar. This is the seriousness of the cover-up, folks. I also want to show you this. This is from a book which was written about the way that the Architects and Engineers Group operates. I forget the exact name of the book, but it's available on Amazon. It's mentioned in this article. But this is a copy of the Architects and Engineers vetting procedures. And section C of this page, which was 3 of 11 from their document, says you need to do searches when members apply to join Architects and Engineers and sign the petition. They have to be vetted. So you have to do Google searches. If you look at Google searches for the keywords that they list, the full name search, you have to include in the search terms no planes, DEW, nukes, HARP, with a single A, not a double A, UFO, Judy Wood, Jews, Holocaust, and Zionism. So who is the only person named in the whole of human history in the Architects and Engineers vetting procedures? It's right there in black and white, folks. I think that right there shows you what that group exists for. It's not to do with the truth of 9/11. It is to cover up the truth of 9/11.
So is it Judy Wood's work, Dr. Judy Wood's work, that you think instigated the architects and engineers grouping?
Yes, essentially because of the timing, and also because we had started to point out that Jones was involved in cold fusion research and stuff, and there's obviously no way that he can deny that because it's in all the history books.
So
when the scholars group ran out of gas, which it did around about 2007, it had a bit of gas into 2008, that sort of time, but they needed another vehicle to rope people into, the sort of more academically minded people, and the architects and engineers group was it. And I could write another book about the architects and engineers group, but it'd be probably fairly boring. The other thing, which maybe while we've got this page up, people might want to be aware of, is I got a copy of, and this was public information, of AE911's tax returns. This is from 2012. And the sorts of money which was going through this group, I think they got something like a turnover of about $1 million. And I think somewhere in here, you will find, it's on my website if people want to go and look for it, that Richard Gage took out a salary of something like $30,000. It's listed in here somewhere. And that information is, because it's a 501c organization, it has to be publicly available. So there's a lot of money going through this group. We don't have a group that, not that we'd necessarily want or need it, we don't have this sort of money going through a group and organizing world tours and this sort of thing, and European tours, as Mr. Gage has done. People have asked where this money comes from, and some of it is listed there.
But so I suppose, just being devil's advocate here, because I like to put an angle on, because obviously I know there's been a few trolls of being, sort of saying tonight that Dr. Judy Wood's stuff is real, and obviously there's a lot of people who follow architects and engineers, like you say, from an academic background, it feels more tangible and credible to them. So one thing that the architects and engineers are doing is they're putting it out there across the world. So more and more people know about 9/11, at least not being what the official story was. I would say it's got out there on a bigger scale because of their presence. Do you think that was their intention?
Yes. I mean, it's basically to scoop up the people that are sceptical of the official story and run them into a place which is no different to the, official story, really, because it's also untrue.
Yeah.
So it's not a problem.
One angle, though, even though, it steers them away from energy, the free energy stuff, which is the thing they don't want people to know about, because it changes the whole of your reality, doesn't it, when you look at the energy?
Essentially, yes.
Yeah. So I can, it changes everything about consciousness, matter, everything that we ever know. So if we start to understand that as beings, our own consciousness can be impacted, and the ability of what we can do with that free energy as well as a population.
Yes. So, yes, so I mean, I take what you're saying in that, yes, they have sort of taken the information to areas which, it might not have got to otherwise. But yes, that was the intention, I think. They've achieved their objectives, and you can prove that they are dishonest, not only from what I've shown you, but because they don't turn around and say, oh, yeah, we're wrong. And some of what they talk is obviously bogus. And that's why, if you look at their membership, the number of actual engineers, real engineers, that you could actually pick up the phone and ring up and talk to, you're going to find that's actually pretty small, because real engineers will know that the organization is bogus.
Right.
And as this is again on my website, if you don't, if the last thing didn't convince you, when Judy Wood is not going to acknowledge any of that evidence and just hand wave it away, then she's not practicing science, she's practicing witchcraft. That is Richard Gage's description on the 8th of May, 2011, of Dr. Wood's book.
Yeah, there's definitely a steering away from it, isn't there? And then for me, anything people try and steer me away from, I want to look at more.
Yeah. So he's describing the book you've got there, Joe, as a book of witchcraft.
No, it's far from that. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, I've just got an error popped up on my screen for some reason. Okay. I don't know why that's come up. I've got a some malware thing. But yeah, we've reached pretty much reached the end of. There's probably a couple of other slides, but I think I've made the points I wanted to make. That and that there are other groups which are also covering stuff up, as well as the architects and engineers. In fact, most of the 9/11 Truth groups that you'll find, you know, Pilots for 9/11 Truth. There was Patriots Question 9/11. That I think page, but it's not so much a group as a page. They had Dr. Judy Wood's biography on the Patriots Question 9/11, then they took it off without her asking to be taken off. So why would they take it off?
And I think, you know, for me, I'm going to read the book. I've watched several of her videos, and absolutely there's something in it, you know, without question. When you look at the footage and you look at the still images, especially, you know, one of the most compelling ones for me is the metal girder as it's falling. Mm-hmm. It's solid, mm-hmm. and then it just turns to dust before it hits the bottom, you know, and you look at that, and metal just doesn't do that. It doesn't do that. And, you know, if you just take just the basic science of that, and, you know, the other factors that compare to the Hutchinson effect, it's got to be challenged, it's got to be questioned. And then if there's such a big effort to cover this fact up, but they're willing to get people to consider it might have been an inside job, because that's what architects and engineers are pretty much alluding to, that there's some cover up internally about it, therefore potentially it's not what the official story was. So they're willing to let us know that it was potentially an inside job, but they don't want us to have access that it was an engineer, a directed energy weapon.
Well, that's it. I mean, it's, you know, it's the classic sort of limited hangout, in that they'll agree with you that the government story is a lie. But at the same time, they're a 501c organisation which is endorsed by the government. You know, so you know, and as you know, there are many similar examples in relation to other fields not to do with 9/11.
Yeah.
Where you'll get groups that are set up, they'll guide people in a certain direction, they'll maybe, you know, give them certain information which they wouldn't get from a mainstream source, and they'll be sort of roped into that and made to feel comfortable with that, when in reality it's just another cover-up. But yes, the biggest secret of 9/11, which is no longer a secret really, thanks to Dr. Judy Wood, is that they've perfected ways of using energy which can turn buildings to powder. And as Dr. Wood basically points out, and it's the theme of the Irrefutable film really, is that the energy source can be used, should be used, of course, to power our world rather than destroy things in it.
Yeah.
Now, you know, whether that can happen is a whole other question, because there are so many issues. But at least we know that the technology is real. We know that somebody owns it. Somebody, you know, utilized it. That's not a theory.
Yeah.
So that's the take-home thing, really, that this energy technology has been disclosed, albeit in a, you know, a black way, in a very negative way. But we want these people that are covering this up should stop covering it up. These trolls that I've mentioned tonight, they need to stop what they're doing, and they need to confess to what they're doing and understand the implications of what they're doing. That's the first, because they're the people that are closest to us. The guys that actually did it, whoever they are, they're miles away from us. We probably no way that we could contact them. But the trolls, they should stop right now. You know,
I think once you shine the light on the truth, they can't do it anymore. And it's about getting people to have a willingness. And a lot of the subjects I've covered, you know, in Reclaiming Perception, I will be covering, is sometimes people aren't willing to look at the truth. But once you see the truth, everything changes, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. It does. But, you know, clearly some people are pretending that they're in some form of pretense about that. That's you know, that's one of the things I find hardest to deal with. You know, I mean, just the article about Ken O'Keefe, for example, is another example that I wrote. And, you know, it's just a shame, because, you know, you get these good people doing good things, and then they turn around and do the wrong thing, you know.
And that's how I see it. It's a shame. And but for me personally, as I'm looking at people who are looking at the truth and revealing the truth from all different angles, down different rabbit holes, some looking at a bigger picture, some going more detailed like you do down specific areas, I feel a shift going on. There's a change where more and more people that wouldn't even look at anything like this are starting to look at it. Are you finding that yourself now?
A little bit, yes. But I think, just to kind of summarise my thoughts on that, it seems to be the case that people are turning away from television. And whilst television is kind of sort of easy to control in some ways, because, people are employed to do a job. So you can, if you say, well, you're going to lose your job, then you can control what goes on the television. And that's obviously very simplistic, but you know what I mean. Whereas with the internet, you've got bloggers and YouTubers just uploading stuff left, right and center just for fun. You have to have a different way of controlling the information.
Yeah, it can be confusing.
It appears to be generation of noise. So you generate as much noise, randomness, poorly thought out material. And in essence, that's part of the natural order on the internet anyway. But if you've got a lot of money and a lot of resources, you can stir that to randomness and make it even more random and noisy, to the point where people get the wrong idea, or even if they're trying to be honest and get the right idea, it's extremely difficult to sort through it all.
And I think really that's the approach they've done with, if we take, for example, politics, the legal system, they swamp you with bureaucracy and rules and procedures, then you don't know which is where to begin, do you?
No.
That's exactly the same principle.
No.
Yeah. So, no, that was really interesting. Thank you, Andrew. Is there anything else you want to add? Do you want to give one more? Your website will have been tagging along the bottom anyway. So it's www.checktheevidence.com. I think it would have been tagging along the bottom. We've mentioned it several times in. And Andrew said, if you want to get in touch with him, any questions, please do so. Any questions for me, my website has been tagging along the bottom as well. And very interesting as usual.
Thank you very much. So my book is free to download, electronic format, so you can download that, the 9/11 book. And there's lots of other stuff on my website, not just 9/11 stuff, there's a fair bit of other material on there too.
Oh, absolutely, there's lots of areas. I think we can get you back on at some point in the near future.
Sure.
That'd be great if you would. Okay, thanks ever so much. It's really nice to speak to you again, Andrew.
And you, Joe. Thanks for your time.
Cheers, thank you.
Okay,
good night.
Bye-bye, good night.
Stand up for Dr. Judy Wood, 'cause she's a force for good. A scientist who knows that wars are bad. Stand up for Dr. Judy Wood, wake up your neighborhood. Pretty soon there'll be less people feeling sad. She's got eyes that saw what nobody else could see. Smile that looks as happy as can be. She figured out a piece of the greatest mystery. What she talks about is elementary. Check the evidence and you will see where all of this came from. There's a truth movement as blind as it could be.
out. When the truth gets out, it's gonna be so enlightening.
And the oil companies and banks will be out of business as soon as everybody knows that hemp, happiness, and free energy can provide us with all the top resources we could ever need.
If we want to change the world, we must first change the media. Mainstream media exists for the purposes of indoctrination and manipulation of public perception. The world of free and independent media is growing, and with the upsurge in information now available in the public domain, it has never been easier to access free and independent media. The exploration of this information resulted in an experimental project which would provide a fully supported space for researchers, whistleblowers, and seekers of all kinds to express themselves and educate the world. On the 1st of January 2015, Conscious Consumer Network was launched to the world. Nobody thought we would make it this far, but CCN is the longest running free and independent media network of its kind. CCN is a unique collaboration of hearts and souls, bringing you information from different perspectives to educate and inform. Since we started CCN, we have had only one desire, the pursuit of a free, fair, just, sustainable world, and this has not changed. Having overcome many challenges over the last 2 years, CCN is here to stay, and we've got great things lined up for 2017. Help keep CCN on the air by supporting the 2017 Network Support Fund.